unsure. KSN has now learned that Kansas parents are turning to the police department for help when it comes to disciplining their children. We're beginning to see an increase and uptick in the number of calls we get dealing with unruly children, said Mays Detective Jeff Piper. Detective Piper says he's talked to area police departments and believes they get an average of 3 to 5 calls a week from parents that don't know how to discipline their kids. He says he also gets a number of calls from upset kids who have just been disciplined. We get calls of children refusing to go to school or refusing to go to bed or causing a disturbance in the home. And once upon a time, those types of matters were dealt with by the parents. And more, we're starting to see parents call the police to deal with these sorts of things. Detective Piper says he wants the community to reach out to the police department with their issues, and he needs people to know that spanking your child is not a crime. A parent is either concerned or fearful of disciplining their child out of fear of being arrested or criminally charged with a crime, said Piper. In the state of Kansas, you can be charged with battery by engaging in physical contact with another person while angry. However, Piper says that wording is vague and adds it's clear by the amount of parents' calls that they're not always sure what constitutes abuse. So we reached out to DCF. There's no law against corporal punishment, said DCF Prevention and Protection Rep Amy Newman. This means that spanking your kids can be okay, but Newman points out there are a few lines that cannot be crossed, right? And she says that's where children are really impaired. They suffer physical damage, there's deterioration in their well-being, and their health is at risk. Newman adds that DCF offers services for families to help guide them through child-rearing techniques. Discipline is really about guiding children and teaching children. It's very much an essential part of child rearing, said Newman. DCF offers a wide range of programs that parents can utilize for discipline methods. Wow. What do you think of that?
Isn't it? Right?
When was that article?
So it's, any guesses what year? 2018.
1990.
20, yeah, I expected that to be a lot older of an article.
There was a West Virginia woman that was arrested last week.
Yeah, so. Yeah, so it is interesting. Again, from when we talk about discipline, a lot of it is, you know, the intent, the law. There's no law that says you have the right, and there's no law that forbids corporal punishment when we talk about the rod. And so a lot of it is, they use the reasonable person doctrine as, are you inflicting harm? Are you, treating them inhumane or cruelly? It's kind of the language. So there's a lot of open.
Yeah. Right?
But you can see how, like, you have these parents that are just don't know, right? As the police officer, they don't know what to do to discipline their unruly kids, and they're calling the police to help.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and we're not, I mean, there's a lot that when you think about, you know, disciplining your child, and we've been talking about these proverbs that talk about the rod of discipline, there's a lot of details that go into that, into how to do that in the most loving and right way. And there is a temptation, and there's a risk of abusing that, right? So let's read these verses, and then we'll talk about a couple questions. So last time we read, whoever spares the rod hates his son, but he who loves him is diligent to discipline him. So what were the things that we just kind of oriented? What were being contrasted here, the two actions of the parent? It was either what? The parent either...
disciplining.
Yeah, so diligent to discipline him, mm-hmm. or the other action was sparing the rod. Mm-hmm. So it kind of, there's somewhat of an equating there, that there's a rod of discipline. You can spare the rod or be diligent to discipline. And what was the motivation in those comparisons?
Hate versus love.
Yeah, hate versus love. So there's this biblical from the Proverbs that refusing to discipline, sparing the rod, is an act of hatred toward your child. And lovingly, right, being diligent to discipline him is loving. What do you think is the difference between disciplining and being diligent to discipline?
Hmm.
Consistency.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Diligent kind of implies like thoughtfulness,
mm-hmm.
not swift out of anger
mm-hmm.
responses. It's a planned,
right?
Yeah.
Right. we can sometimes discipline just out of reactionary anger, right, which doesn't really show that we've been diligent. Or we can be inconsistent, right? We can do it once, but not. What do you think is the danger of being inconsistent in your discipline? Let's say that when you do discipline, you're very loving, you're very caring, you're doing it in the right way, but you're very inconsistent. What happens there?
Child doesn't know what you actually mean.
They're pretty confused, right? And so, how does that continue to work out? Let's say they're confused.
They're going to constantly test the boundaries.
Mm-hmm. Be unsure of what they can and can't.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What about on the parents' end? When we're like not diligent to do it consistently, what can result in that?
You have to discipline for way longer.
Okay, like, because you never really teach the lesson.
Yeah, so like you're gonna have to deal with a certain issue for longer than whether if you're consistent on it, then it's mm-hmm. like, oh, they understand this is where the boundary is. I'm gonna work.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm not gonna pass that boundary. They might try to, like, hey, like, this is where the rule is, so I'm not gonna pass this. But if that rule is always changing or that boundary is always changing, but they don't know where,
mm-hmm.
they're gonna keep pushing that boundary. It's like, oh, well, I was able to do it this time, but I can't
mm-hmm.
do it this time.
Yeah, I think everybody has a boundary. And so I'll discipline when I'm not tired and engaged,
mm-hmm.
but if I'm tired and had a hard day, I won't discipline.
Mm-hmm.
So your kids have kind of learned what the boundary is.
Right.
When they're tired, I can do what I want.
Mm-hmm.
If they're not tired, I need to be careful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there's always a pattern.
Yeah.
And it just makes it more complex for them to pick up. You don't really get to set the agenda.
Mm-hmm.
If you're diligent, you can set the agenda. Otherwise,
yeah. Yeah.
You're going to be pretty passive and
right.
regress.
Yeah, so true. Like, and sometimes your kids, like you, they were saying how your kids will pick up on when they need to obey and not. And a lot of times it's even unconscious. Like they just, it's like they get a sense of when they can, you know, act out and you're not going to respond.
Mom and dad are distracted.
Yeah. What about between? Yeah, in the marriage, what about in between husband and wife? What can be a result of that inconsistent discipline?
Sometimes you'll have one spouse who is regularly disciplining and in one sense can feel like they're always the bad.
Mm-hmm. Good cop, bad cop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then it's very confusing to the child
mm-hmm.
to not see both parents on the same page.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sometimes if you have one that's inconsistent, they can kind of lose the respect of the child. Where the child knows they don't really have to obey one, but if the other one gets involved, and so, yeah, one can feel like the bad guy or the bad mom. So we also have Proverbs 19:18. Discipline your son, for there is hope. Do not set your heart on putting him to death. So we have, again, discipline is one thing, disciplining your son. What's the other action contrasted? Yeah, it's pretty severe. Discipline or put him to death. And so what is the, yeah.
Well, I was thinking about this proverb in the parallel between whenever Jesus says, like, whenever you're angry with something, you're basically murdering.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. There's definitely a sense where the discipline must come as it has to be motivated by love, not anger, right? That's really good. And there's an added aspect here to this proverb. That what else is added in terms of the motivation? Hope, yeah, yeah.
It won't be this way forever.
It won't be this way forever. Kind of leading back to what Leo was saying, like there is a sense in which you have this goal that discipline will result in. There's the fruit of, you know, training from that, right? I think we talked earlier about how there's oftentimes stages that you go through from birth to, you know, your child leaving the home. And like discipline with a rod is usually a confined certain stage that doesn't carry on the whole length of birth to 18, right? Mm-hmm. So there's a certain time where it can be very useful, very fruitful, but you're hopeful that you're going to progress kind of through that time, to where they receive and that authority is established.
Yeah, I think it might be helpful too to, I mean, there's alternatives to the rod as well. So we were able to motivate our kids with different actions.
Mm-hmm.
So for one son, it was bans from watching all Jayhawk games. Where another son, it was a ban on sweets, which was like, he melted like,
no.
Yeah. So sometimes, you might find another way of motivating
mm-hmm.
them. So you're not confined that that's the only way.
Yeah. Yeah, and one thing that's for certain is that when we, if we were, you know, teaching or displaying through a certain issue, there's a huge aspect of it is praise and encouragement for when they're being obedient, when they're doing the things that they should. And I think many, many times that's more powerful than than the rod of discipline, and whether that's at home or I've seen in the classroom, that sometimes just some love and some affirmation really builds into a child
mm-hmm.
more than, you know, 100 blows to the back of the fool with the Proverbs.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's read a few Proverbs. So everybody go ahead and turn page 7. How we're looking at how might failure to discipline doom the child. Let's look these Proverbs up. So give me some volunteers. Proverbs 1:32. Someone. Yes, Nathaniel. And then Proverbs 10:27. Yes, Caleb. And 21:25. You got it. Okay, so we're going to read through these. Proverbs 1:32, 10:27, 21. And be thinking about, like, what might be results of a failure to discipline and to train our children. All right, Nathaniel.
For the simple are killed by their turning away, and the complacency of fools destroys them.
Mm-hmm. And 10:27.
The fear of the Lord prolongs life, but the years of the wicked will be short.
Mm-hmm. And then 21:25.
The desire of the sluggard kills him, for his hands refuse to labor.
Wow. Okay. So what's the general result here?
Death.
Death, yes, very, very clear. Killed, life will be cut short. So what does that mean? Why would failure, that seems, if you're telling someone that and they see, that seems a little extreme that, you know, not discipline your kids, is they're just gonna kill them. What do you guys think? How would you respond if you're in a conversation that like that?
Like what we were talking about last week, if you're saying like come here,
mm-hmm.
it could be playing in the street and there could be a car coming.
Okay,
like,
yeah, immediate
so
danger.
An aspect of safety
mm-hmm.
that goes along with that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think everybody knows that children left to themselves are not safe.
Yeah,
and I think a lot of the modern recommendations is to medicate kids
mm-hmm.
and basically alter them
mm-hmm.
in some way. And
mm-hmm.
I think a case could be made that maybe spanking might be a better option than that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everyone understands it. So
mm-hmm.
what are you supposed to do?
Yeah.
And this is traditionally something
mm-hmm.
that has been done, as long as it's not an anger, that is protection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think many times when there is just a completely rebellious individual, many times does lead to death, like actual physical death.
Mm-hmm.
I have many conversations with youth in their junior high years that it was like, you've got to get some of this figured out or you're going to be in jail or
mm-hmm.
dead. And
mm-hmm.
sadly seeing that
yeah.
play out in several.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you want to flip back to Hebrews 12, we read this text earlier. Just going to touch on one part of it. So the author in Hebrews 12 is talking about the discipline of the Lord. I'm going to start in verse, kind of the middle of verse 5. My son, do not regard lightly the discipline of the Lord, nor be weary when reproved by him. For the Lord disciplines the one he loves and chastises every son whom he receives. It's for discipline that you have to endure. God is treating you as sons. For what son is there whom his father does not discipline? If you are left without discipline, in which you have all have participated, then you are illegitimate children and not sons. Besides this, we have had earthly fathers who disciplined us, and we respected them. Shall we not much more be subject to the Father of spirits and lived? So, one thing that I think about when it talks about the, how it could lead to death, I've talked to multiple young people who receive no discipline, mm-hmm. and they clearly interpret it along with this text, that they feel unloved. Mm-hmm. Their parents don't really care what they do and what they don't do. Mm-hmm. I can do this, I can do that. My mom and dad don't, they're not going to do anything. Mm-hmm. They're not going to punish me. And so they interpret that, you know, if you're left without discipline, then you're illegitimate children and not sons, right? And there's a sense where they kind of lose this respect for their parents because they realize, you know, if mom and dad really cared, they would be concerned about these actions, right? So it really can kind of lead them down this path where they lose a sense of any kind of worth in themselves, that type of thing. They don't see that they're valued. So how does it kind of push back against maybe some of the modern ideas of parenting? What would be maybe some modern ideas that would not fit in with this, that you might run into with friends or coworkers or people that you run across in our culture?
Gentle parenting.
Yeah, gentle parenting. Mm-hmm. And, right, focusing on their feelings. A little, go back into, remember, we talked a little about that in the past. What was the thing about gentle parenting, you remember?
That it's kind of going based off, like, how the kid wants to lead their life.
Mm-hmm. And even one thing was just that there was no real right and wrong when they're kids. It's just everything's a developmental stage. Mm-hmm. So that's just part of being a kid, mm-hmm. right? Just part of being a kid.
And I think sometimes that downplays your child's intelligence, like a lot of times it's just a different thing. Because they're just going through this phase, but like, no, your child is being knowingly disobedient.
Mm-hmm.
And you're allowing it.
Yeah. And it minimizes the responsibility of the child, the intellect of the child, and even the ability or the role of parenting. There's no real involvement there. Yeah.
Yeah, I think one thing with gentle parenting, it creates brass. And I've been thinking about this I could get into why. My family knows why. But one thing with brats is they're very self-entitled, very demanding, and I need to get my own way.
Mm-hmm.
And if that is your mindset in life, every single relationship you will have will be extremely difficult,
mm-hmm.
and you won't know why.
Mm-hmm.
Because part of living in community is you surrender some of your preferences and your wants.
Mm-hmm.
If you demand to get your own way all the time and try to make the community all about them, and
mm-hmm.
you're married to somebody who has that same mindset, you're headed for constant friction.
Yeah.
And so, honestly, like, gentle parenting doesn't prepare people to live in community, doesn't prepare people for friendship, for marriages,
mm-hmm.
for family life, or anything like that, because it leads to self-entitled.
Mm-hmm.
Self-entitled kids become self-entitled adults.
Yeah. 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 I want to really build on that. So the next verse is like probably the number one most quoted verse in Proverbs about parenting, right? Train up a child in the way he should go, and even when he's old, he will not depart from it. And so when you think about our parenting, right, everything we're doing is training them, right?
Yeah.
So if we like our gentle parenting and we train them to be selfish and I'm the focus of everything, it's going to guide the way that we go the rest of our lives. But what is the general, like, if, when you're interpreting this, remember what we talked about for Proverbs, where we like observe life and then make an observation. What's the general sense of this verse? What is it saying, if you had to distill it down?
If you raise a kid right, they'll be good when they grow up, basically.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Will not depart.
Yeah. And what do you guys think about just what if it's not the right? Just if we just said, you know, if you the way you train up a child, what's it going to be the result? They're going to tend to live that way. As they do, right?
So it's also the inverse.
Yeah.
If you train up a child.
If you don't train up a child in the way they should go, they probably won't depart from that way either, right? That there's a general tendency that your upbringing has a tremendous impact upon the way you're going to live out the rest of your life, right? That's the general observation.
There's a way of interpreting it in the negative, where, because I think the Hebrew is where he should, in the way he should go, could also be in his way.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like speaks directly against gentle parenting, because if that's, you're training them up in his way, the way that the child wants to go, they're not going to depart from it.
That's the negative
interpretation of it.
Yeah, and this word train, it's not just, it doesn't just mean teach. There's an aspect there, it speaks of dedication. It's to dedicate it for, or set it aside for a more specific purpose. So the altar was dedicated. It can't be used for a fire pit or the table. It's used for worship. So this child training, it's setting their behavior, like telling them that your life is to be lived according to this way, setting that aside from other means, other purposes. And so I think number one question that comes up a lot is this really a promise? Should we take this as a promise as to how we parent and what's going to be the result?
General promise.
What does that mean? If it's generally true, what does that also mean?
Could not work.
Yeah. So a couple of ways there are exceptions, right? Where you have parents that train up a child in the way they should go, and they do depart from it, right? Later in life.
Mm-hmm.
You also have parents who don't train up the child in the way they should go, and the Lord still saves them and directs them.
Yeah.
Right. And most likely we're all kind of a blend, where none of us have had perfectly righteous, godly parents, and none of us had totally depraved parents, right? We all come kind of from a blend. But in general, the idea is that our training of our children, the way we set them apart, what we dedicate them to, is going to have a long-lasting impact. So let's look at, before we look at this passage, what's like the motivation? How, when you look at that verse, how does that motivate you, like as a parent?
You want your kids to succeed.
Mm-hmm.
You want them to be followers of Jesus. We talked about parents' roles in that already, but just that reality of if you want your kids to succeed, you have to have positive input into that.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be dedicated to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The last part of that, you know, when he is old, he will not depart from it. I think there's motivation in knowing that you have trained your child. They may ignore it for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
They grow to be a grown adult. But perhaps that training that you spend so much time in,
mm-hmm.
when they're old, they will remember.
Yeah, that's a good point. It may be that there's a time or which it doesn't seem like they're...
Mm-hmm.
It seems like they may have departed from it.
Yeah.
But it could be that when they're old or older, they return to that.
Mm-hmm. When their money's gone and they're eating pig slop.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
They might return. You mentioned the prodigal son. When their money's gone and they're eating pig slop, they might come home. Finding the error of their ways. Not that we're praying for that. other ways that that motivates us as parents?
Parenting is more than keeping your child alive.
Right. And more than maybe helping them reach their own, following their heart, self-actualization type thing. Like, there's a certain part of parenting where you're imparting not just like actions and but also desires. What is it that you love? Because their heart is the key that the heart of parenting is the heart of the child, right? So we're really focused on teaching them and helping them to learn to love the right things, to love the Lord more than we are our behavior or anything else. And if we can be used by the Lord to reach their heart, then the behavior, again, that's secondary.
Yeah, and you kind of see two eras in this. Like, you have the child versus old, and then you have the training, which is what we do, and then not depart, which is what he or she does. So at some point in time, I mean, they're out on their own.
Yeah.
It doesn't last forever.
Yeah.
I mean, this is specifically for the season of when they are a child.
Yeah, and it's much, I think, before parenting, it seems like it's much longer than it really is, and after it seems much shorter than it really is. And even with, if you have your child at home for, let's say, 18 years, there's particular seasons that are extremely short, where there's different things that you do that will have a lifelong impact on them, from 0 to 2 and 2 to 5 and so on. And so those seasons are, and that gives us a lot of hope to, like, the passage about don't grow weary in doing good, for at due season you'll reap if you don't give up. So there's a certain, it's like, just remember, you know, they're not going to be this way for very long, right? They'll grow up to be wonderful young adults.
Yes.
Okay, so let's look at the flip side. There's a couple of bad examples, right? I have somebody that would like to read 1 Samuel passage here. Dan got it. Go ahead.
Now Eli was very old, and he kept hearing all that his sons were doing to all Israel, and how they lay with the women who were serving at the entrance to the tent of meeting. And he said to them, "Why do you do such things? For I hear of your evil dealings from all these people. No, my sons, it is not good report that I hear the people of Israel spreading abroad. If someone sins against a man, God will mediate for him. But if someone sins against the Lord, who can intercede for him? But they would not listen to the voice of their father, for it was the will of the Lord to put them to death." Verse 29, the Lord rebukes Eli with, "Why then did you scorn my sacrifices and my offerings that I commanded for my dwelling, and honor your sons above me by fattening yourselves on the choicest parts of every offering of my people Israel?"
Okay, so we've got some grown-up kids, right? We get some insight into the parenting. What was the, so we see that he does speak to them as when they're adults, at least. It's no good, right? We see that they don't listen. They didn't listen to the voice of their father. And what's the kind of insight that we get from verse 29 that the Lord kind of rebukes Eli with? Why is this going on?
He honors his sons above God.
Yeah, honoring his sons above me. What would that look like? So say his sons are really little and you see them kind of growing up. We're looking at snapshots. What does it look like to honor your sons or your daughters above the Lord?
I mean, he's a priest.
Yes.
Yeah. know the law.
Should know better, yeah.
And it should be being spoken and taught mm-hmm. every day, sitting mm-hmm. down, standing up. And
yeah.
He's not requiring them to obey.
Yeah. And we do see him speaking to them, at least as when they're older. So, seem to be something missing. Mm-hmm. What else do you guys think? What could it have looked like? Could have been a lack of teaching, a lack of telling them what they ought
yeah.
to do and what they ought not to do.
Doesn't seem like he ever removed them from their positions. Like, just kind of like, come on, what are you doing this for?
Mm-hmm.
But really didn't have any.
So there's words without any kind of action
yeah.
could be.
Going back to the Proverbs, it seems like, so he's trying to correct them when they're old, and it seems like maybe there's a point where it's a lot harder to train your child.
Yeah.
And once they got old enough, they were grown men, it's
there wasn't any hope.
It's kind of over for Eli. Like, he just didn't train them well.
Yeah. Yeah. He just missed some of the key windows.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a good book, good parenting book that we have, The Age of Opportunity, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's certain ages, and each age has its own particular opportunity, and yeah. And an analogy I really liked is, you know, that if you poured concrete, right, the earlier, right, it's wet, it's easier to mold, the harder it is, the longer it goes. You can still break it up, but it's a lot harder, a lot more work to change
mm-hmm.
it.
Yeah, and I've seen some parents, like when you see something wrong in your kids, it demands a response on your part. And like the older they are, especially when they're teenagers, it's like you're looking at creating friction in the household.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it will not be pleasant for anybody. I mean,
mm-hmm.
and chances of victory are not 100% like when they were two.
Yes.
And so sometimes it's just easier to either ignore it, excuse it, or and that often leads to maybe gaslighting other people, like, oh, you don't know my son like I do, he's
mm-hmm.
not this way at home.
Yeah.
And they want to honor their son instead of facing reality.
Yeah, I know that one thing that's a challenge in our heart, and it seems like sometimes from the outside that this honoring your sons above me, there's a sense in which if we and all of us want our kids to love us, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if we want that more
mm-hmm.
than we want to honor the Lord, we'll sacrifice.
Yeah.
And we will never displease our children because it hurts so much for them to say, you know, like rebel
mm-hmm.
that you're a mean mom or whatever it is that they say, right? They're not going to be happy for those times. Just like in, you know, we talked about in Hebrews, it says, for they disciplined us for a short time as it seemed best to them, but he disciplines us for our good that we may share in his holiness. For the moment, all discipline seems painful rather than pleasant.
Mm-hmm.
So nope, none of your kids are going to like to be disciplined, and they're not going to like you during that time, especially during that time.
Mm-hmm.
So there's definitely a sense in which I have seen parents who really want to have a good, strong relationship with their kids, and they've placed it higher than honoring and being obedient to the Lord, and so there's a sacrifice that happens where they're unable to displease their children.
Mm-hmm.
So that becomes a great challenge.
Yeah.
Let's look at 1 Kings 5, 1 Kings 1, 5, 6, and we'll read down. Noah, thanks.
Sounds a lot of hard names in it.
Good luck. Good luck.
His father had never at any time displeased him by asking, why have you done this? And so, he was also a very handsome man, and he was born next after Absalom.
Oh, great role model in his older brother.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Plus, they've got that strike against him. They're so handsome, right? Used to getting his ways, charm. Right? But what's the problem? What did David do? What's it say? He what?
Never
never even asked him.
Yeah, never said anything.
Why are you doing this?
Yeah. It seems strange.
What were you thinking? Yeah.
I see you going around saying you're going to be king. It seems like you already have a king already. What's going on? Okay. And Proverbs 22:15, folly is bound up in the heart of a child, but the rod of discipline drives it far from him. What is the natural disposition here that we see of kids? It's just natural for them to what?
Be foolish.
Be foolish. It's bound up in the heart of the child, right? I can speak from personal experience. Just the most natural thing to my mind was just foolishness for many, many years as a child, right? It was not naturally wise or cautious or any of these other, right? And the prescription, what's the prescription?
The rod.
The rod of discipline, right? Yeah. Not just discipline, not just the rod, right? But the two together, right? We don't want to just apply the rod. We don't want to just discipline. But the Proverbs says to use the rod of discipline. And wrapping up our section on discipline here, Proverbs 23:13-14. Do not withhold discipline from a child. If you strike him with the rod, he will not die. If you strike him with the rod, you'll save his soul from Sheol. Whew. Okay, so we're contrasting again. Mm-hmm. So we've got withholding discipline contrasted with what?
Striking him with a rod.
Striking him with a rod twice. We see it there.
Mm-hmm.
So that's contrasted one with the other. Okay. And then the two actions, they say, he will not do this and you will what? Well, so what will not happen to him?
Won't die.
He will not. He won't die from it. And what will happen?
Save the soul from Sheol.
Yeah. Okay. So, let's be clear. Because we've gone through a lot talking about, right, saying the Proverbs really speaks to disciplining, the use of how the rod can be very useful, it can impart wisdom. What are some key ways to know when it can be taken too far? The striking with the rod. What are some key things to remember? If you're going to use the rod of discipline, we don't want, what's our list of things?
You don't want to do it out of anger.
No anger, right? Which is not as easy as it sounds, right? That's why it's a good thing that there's two parents, right? So hopefully you always have at least one. And we have had times where it's okay that maybe the children need discipline, but if you're unable to do it, if you're angry, that you may need to prolong that, to hold off on that. No comments from the front row here.
Mm-hmm.
What else? So not out of anger. Yeah.
Like if you're leaving bruising and leaving marks, you're going too far.
Right. The key thing is that, right, the rod is meant to teach a lesson, not to physically inflict harm or damage,
mm-hmm.
right? So it marks, bruising, that's too much, that's excessive. And that's a good sign that we're not doing it correctly. So we got that. I think, like, frustration, right? That's kind of not necessarily anger, but just that you're out of control. You're just doing it because you've lost. You don't know what else to do. That's a key sign that it's mm-hmm. not being done the right way. Alina, were you gonna say? Add something?
I'm not sure if I'm answering the question, but I do think when we spank, when we use the rod, we don't do our children any good if we don't show them how to obey.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah, it's very important to see that the goal is not just our children have sinned, they need punishment. That's not really the use. That the rod of discipline is meant to teach a lesson. And so one of the things that was key is that, like, for us, there was, like, after applying the discipline or the spanking, that was, like, halfway through the process. So we explain to them or ask them, what did you do, right? Why are you getting, why are we getting these spanking? Or if they knew, that's good. If not, we tell them, we told you to do this, you did that. right? We get them the spanking. Then we sit down, right? Calm them. What should you do next time, right? What should you have done? What would have been the right thing to do? And then often follow through with just like a practice, depending on if they're really young, right? So if it was, come here, no, right? Like, okay, that was our, and then we come back, and then we go out and we practice. Okay, the tears. Come here, and then they come over, yeah, right? So let's do that. And then often there was another thing, it would be seeking reconciliation. So if I'm disciplining a child for something where they sinned against their mother, it might be that they confess and seek forgiveness. Okay, go up, talk to mama, ask her for forgiveness for XYZ. So putting that all together, it's just a part of that disciplining process. Mm-hmm. Other thoughts? Yeah.
Yeah, I think kind of speaking of that, sometimes when kids get worked up into a tantrum, that's probably not the time to spank them. Mm-hmm. You need to wait for them to calm down, because the point is instruction, mm-hmm. not to just spank and get it over with.
Right. Yeah. Yep. So knowing the kids, making sure that both you and they are in a place to, not that they're ever going to be calm, joyful about.
Yeah.
Right.
But they're not like,
within reason.
They're not in an unconscious rage.
Right. Rashing about.
How do you deal with
tantrums? Oh, well, let's see. There is a lot of factors, right? There are a lot of factors. I will say dealing with one spontaneously is different than like talking about, because if there's a pattern that emerges, it's a lot easier to talk as parents about the next time or if this happens again. I will say there's a couple of key things to remember, is that discipline is best applied in private, if possible, right? So sometimes if you're in a public place, you want to intervene for the safety of your kid and people around you to try and remove them to a place where they're not going to hurt themselves or others. But then that time of teaching or giving the spanking or whatever, that's best done without the audience, because it's really between you and the child.
Yeah.
Right. But if it's something that's repeated, like let's say you go to the grocery store, and every time you go through
they
the checkout aisle,
they sense your weakness.
You're weak. There's all these witnesses around. Oh, I want, give me that candy. I want some candy. No, we're not having candy. I want candy. And they throw a fit and they roll around the shopping cart. Never happened. But that's something where you could maybe talk about, okay, this happened at the grocery store. What are we going to do if this happens again? Right? You kind of plan things out. And each situation is going to be different. But having a plan of how can you like pause what you're doing. I will say that it's very important and challenging as a parent of young kids, that almost everywhere you go with your kids, you almost have to be ready to stop what you're doing and go have some time talking and disciplining. And it can often be at the most inopportune times. But you have to get up from a meal, you might have to stop the car, right? Whatever it is. There's a certain sense where if you always put it off when it's inconvenient, your kids are going to never be obedient when it's inconvenient.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say, yeah, with tantrums, it's kind of like the United States hostage policy. You never pay the ransom.
Right. Yeah.
Because they're trying to hold you hostage. You never, ever pay the ransom. You never do the, okay, when we get
this
to the car,
right,
you can get this. Or if
right,
you do this, you don't bribe, don't do anything. Mm-hmm. We used to practice what we called Moses spankings, you know, where Moses looked one way, then looked the other, then killed a guy. we would look to the left, look to the right, and then just give a quick whack or a pinch or a flick on the cheek to kind of stun them and then
wake up.
You know, kind of wake up.
Yeah.
And then we talk about it. But yeah, you have to be prepared to win every single battle against a tantrum if you want it to end.
Yeah.
If you concede, if you go ahead and pay the ransom, you do that, they're just going to learn that tantrums work.
Right. And everybody has their own. We had, you know, the van. We were out in public.
Yeah.
We need to go to the van. You know, like, no, I don't want to go to the van. We'll be right back. We just need to go over to the van here.
You better hope they don't take our cart and put all the stuff the
Right, right. You stay here with the other kids. I'll be back, right? But yeah, and even like it's different. You know, they kind of sense, you know, when it's just mom or just dad or if they're together. But one of the key things that's I think was really was transformative is that every time that you're taking an opportunity to do this, your goal is to connect with the heart of your child and to really convey over and over and over, I am doing this for your good. I love you. I know that God has said that, you know, all sin is punished, and there's God's given the authority of the police and the government and all of these authorities, that I'm doing this to teach you, to care for you. And eventually, right, the goal is that, and many times they finally like understand that, they believe that. And so they both, your goal and your hope is that they submit to your authority, right? You no longer need to apply the rod of discipline in that same way. And they just, okay, mom and dad have the authority and they're here to teach me and they're here to love me. That message will eventually, it'll sink in. So, yeah.
I'm sure it's been said 1,000 times, but Don't Make Me Count to Three by Ginger Hubbard. It's a
yes.
Great book.
Great book.
One thing that she says is to tell your child that I love you too much to let you continue to live foolishly.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Yeah, I think the one last thing I'd throw in too, how can it be taken too far, is that you really don't need a rod of discipline for every like childish mistake and just foolish accidents. You know, I spilled the milk on the table. Oh, you know, right? Okay, it's just an accident, right? Your kids are going to make lots and lots of foolish, childish. They're just going to be childish. That's different than not necessarily being disobedient and rebellious.
Mm-hmm. There's a difference between spilling the milk and throwing the milk on the
table. Throwing it in your face, right? All right, good place to wrap up for today. Next time we'll talk about instruction for children. Let me pray for us. Father, it is a joy, as we look at your word, to see that you discipline us for our good. You are our example, the Heavenly Father. And we look at you as the most loving Father, the perfect Father, and you show loving discipline as a sign that you are our Father and we are your children. And let us embrace that and know that when there's a loving relationship between parents and children, there will be discipline for our good, to train us and to produce the fruit of righteousness. We thank you so much for this time. We thank you so much for the word, for the spirit that guides us into the truth of the word. And pray that you help us as we both parent, as we give counsel to those who will be parenting, and as we prepare to parent in the future. Help us to do so in a way that brings honor and glory to you. In Christ's name.